We're going to talk a little baseball tonight. I'm joined in the studio tonight by Chad Dotson, founder of the Red Leg Nation website and co-author of the new book, The Big 50, The Men and Moments That Made the Cincinnati Reds. Chad says he's a third-generation Reds fan who had the Herculean task of boiling down 149 years of Cincinnati Reds history into 50 chapters covering specific seasons or World Series or players or personalities. So, Chad, welcome to WVXU.
Oh, thank you very much. Happy to be here.
So, I've been a Reds fan all my life and a professional writer for like 45 years. So, I can't imagine have to boil down 149 years of history into just 50 chapters. So, how did you do it?
Easier said than done. We could have made this at the big 100 very easily, obviously, the Cincinnati Reds with nearly a century and a half of highlights. And we call the book a full-color highlight reel of Reds history. So we just tried to pick the top 100. Our first cut was 70-75, and we just whittled down, my co-author Chris Garber and I just whittled it down until we got to 50 that we felt like were representative of the different eras in Reds history that were the most important in shaping the franchise, and the different personalities, the individuals who made the Reds. And we're pretty happy with the product.
So for the listener out there, some of them are chapters like on the season, the 39 season or the 75 season or the 70 season or the 90 Wild Wire season. Some of them are about those World Series and you kind of recap the season into those. And then there's others about players or personalities like Larkin and Sparky and Joe Morgan. And then some of the years you might not think of, like 95 or 99, the year before they acquired Griffey and went to that awful, don't remind me about it, one-game playoff against the Mets.
The worst.
So of the 50, is there a favorite chapter or chapters or your favorite seasons or players, the one you had the most fun writing?
Sure, there's several that I could probably name here. Probably the most fun that I had in writing the book was writing the chapter on Yul Blackwell, a pitcher from the mid-1900s who...
And we should say that he was well before your time.
A little bit before my time. And of course, as a big Reds fan, I knew a lot about him. And one of the things that we tried to do with this book is we knew that a lot of people were going to be reading this. We're sort of casual Reds fans, and we wanted it to be good stories, entertaining for them. But we also, in every chapter, we tried to find something that we didn't know as huge Reds fans. And that Blackwell chapter was a good example of that. I knew about Blackwell. I knew he was one of the best pitchers in Reds history. He's in the Reds Hall of Fame. But I did not quite realize what a phenomenon he was when he played in the 40s. He made six straight National League All-Star teams. He was considered to be the most dominant pitcher in the National League at that time. And one of the joys of this, and we did a lot of research in this book, one of the joys was going through and finding all the different nicknames or descriptions of Yul Blackwell in papers across the country and certainly here in Cincinnati as well. My favorite is a New York writer said he was a Picasso interpretation of an octopus in labor. And sports writers back in that day were very flowery because he was a big tall guy with a strange motion.
Didn't he have like 16 straight wins or something at one point?
Absolutely. We sort of keyed the chapter on a no-hitter, but yeah, he won 16 straight games and was just considered around the league to be as unhittable as any pitcher that had ever lived at that time.
He was the Randy Johnson, the Bob Gibson, the Nolan Ryan of his era.
Those are great analogies, absolutely, because he was called the Whip. That was his actual nickname. And he had this sort of sidearm motion. He's tall and lanky and all arms and legs coming at you. And hitters, Randy Johnson is a great example of what it was like from the other side, throwing with his right hand. But just he was a fascinating individual. And for me, that was a chapter that was a lot of fun to write.
In the book, you said a book was 10 years in the making. And I know it can take several years to write a book. So I was really surprised and impressed that you've got Scooter Jeanette's four home runs from last year as one of the 50 chapters. So did you have to knock somebody out to squeeze Scooter in at the last minute?
We did. Pretty good story, actually. This book was actually slated for release last year around opening day, and some things happened, and the publisher decided to push it off a year, and Triumph Books is the publisher, and we figure they know more about the publishing than we do, so we weren't necessarily pleased with that, but it was what it was. Well, when that happened, all of a sudden, we have the Scooter Jeanette moment, and my co-author, Chris Garber, and I are talking. We're like, oh, no, that has to be in there. That's one of the big 50 greatest moments in history. And so we rushed back to the publisher and said, if we get one done quickly, can we replace a chapter? And we had a chapter on a guy named Walker Cooper, who had the greatest batting performance in Reds history up until Scooter Jeanette entered the scene. And so we quickly wrote it. You know, some people with the Reds, Dick Williams, general manager at the time, now director of baseball operations for the Reds, gave us some good insight on how that day went. And we pumped out a chapter that we're actually pretty proud of. And we slid it in chapter 39. Everyone's always asking about the Scooter chapter. That used to be Walker Cooper's chapter.
I've interviewed many authors over the years, but I've never asked a question about footnotes. Now, I really enjoyed the book because you had some wonderful footnotes in it. Like in the Nasty Boys chapter, there was a footnote, and it was Marge Schott who said, quote, Rob is like a baby. I just like to spank him and tell him to shut up. And then there was another one in the Pete hit streak, 1978. You guys were each 5, 6 years old, something like that. And how you were heartbroken that Pete's streak was stopped because Pete was your favorite player.
Absolutely. And that's something that we really had to fight for to get some of these footnotes, because there were so many little interesting anecdotes that really didn't fit into the narrative. And we wanted each chapter to have a narrative, but that we felt like we couldn't leave out. Part of that Pete Rose chapter, one of the little sort of side notes to that chapter that's in the book, is my co-author's name is Chris Garber. The pitcher who stopped Pete Rose's streak, 44-game hitting streak that year, was Gene Garber of the Braves. And Chris goes bawling into his parents' bedroom, wasn't supposed to be listening to the game, and says, "We've got to change our name. I can't be Garber anymore." And so, yeah, we tried to add little anecdotes like that, little things that add a little flavor.
Did you go into it thinking, we're going to do footnotes and do some funny things? Or was it that you just had so much good stuff that the only way it fit into the narrative and stand out would be, let's do some funny footnotes?
Well, we had the idea that we wanted to make it not necessarily humorous, but we wanted to make it fun to read. And we did want to include things that would make you laugh. And we didn't go into it thinking we're going to have footnotes, but it sort of became the way that we could lighten up the narrative sometimes. And I think it worked well. I hope so.
I got to ask you, so if Cooper Walker was 51, what were chapters like 52? I mean, because I would imagine you had a list of like 100 in the beginning. And then you said, okay, do we do Clue or not? Or do we do Wade Hoyt or Frank Robinson? Or it must have been tough, really tough.
Certainly, it was really difficult. You know, Ted Kluszewski and Frank Robinson, those are two that we didn't devote an individual chapter to that some people might think, oh, are you crazy? I mean, Frank Robinson is one of the, you know, single greatest players that will ever have played for the Cincinnati Reds. So when we started cutting, we tried to maybe combine. So our chapter on the 61 Reds, we tried to make that more focused towards Frank Robinson. And we tried to fit those things in other ways. One that was a real late cut was the first night game in baseball history, of course. The first televised game, you know, we couldn't decide, do we do both of them? Those are the types of decisions we had to make.
I also figured you probably said it, the first TV game with Red Barber, and then you could kind of back in how Red Barber came here in 34, or Wade Hoyt and the stories. Because you did Matty Schwab and Bernie Stowe, which kind of gets you Crosley Field,
right?
Without saying this is Crosley Field. So that was another way you could kind of do that. And Riverfront kind of permeated all the Big Red Machine chapters.
Sure. And I'd love to write a book about Riverfront Stadium itself, so many great moments. But the book really could probably be called The Big 65 or something, because we did try to sort of smash two or more stories into some chapters, just because there's so many great stories and so many great personalities in the history of this organization. 50 was an impossible task.
Well, I was reading the index or the chapter list, and I thought, okay, where's March? And then she shows up many places.
She does. And that was one that we thought, do we add a chapter? Because certainly that's one of the personalities that shaped the organization. And she's in there in a number of places. We didn't shy away from talking about Marge Schott, but she didn't get her own individual chapter.
When you did this book, up front you say, this is not sabermetrics, this is not stats. Your eyes won't glaze over. We're just going to tell good people story. And there's wonderful quotes. And you said it took like 10 years to do, but I don't think 10 years ago you could have done this book, because you drew from not just the two Cincinnati newspapers that covered the Reds. You could get Dayton, you could get New York Times, you could get the LA Times version of great Red stories playing there. Magazines, I counted up 57, 58 books, you know, about baseball in general, or all the great books about the great Cincinnati Reds over the years.
There's no way this book could have been written 10 years ago, by me anyway, and Chris, because through the internet, we have access to all those papers, and not just scrolling the microfiche and all that. But it's so much easier to dig through almost 150 years of stories. And then our local public libraries, interlibrary loan, I mean, we used to utilize every resource we had, or we really didn't have to travel very far to do it, you know. I mean, we did go out and talk to some people, and I had a good chance to talk to some of the 1990 Reds. But the bulk of the book was written based on just research, trying to find little anecdotes, little things that may have been lost to history that were at one time written about, but that we don't know now, and trying to insert those in every chapter.
Plus, if you can read the two beat writers at the two Cincinnati papers, who are going head-to-head in a newspaper war to try to get the latest scoop, plus not to mention Hal McCoy out of Dayton, where you could just get great quotes and great takes on whatever happened. And on top of that, you know, now you can go and look up any box score of any game. It just blows me away.
Well, absolutely. We're certainly blessed in the Cincinnati area with incredible sports writers over the years. Just absolutely incredible. And another thing, also YouTube. We are able to actually watch a lot of these games on YouTube. Whereas, you know, 10 years ago, it's a different world. And so that also provided a lot of flavor. We got to hear some of the television commentary and the radio commentary on these from the time. And it really gave some good context to each of these moments.
Well, one of the guys that I wished you'd done a chapter on was Jim Maloney and his no-hitters. But you mentioned YouTube. The one no-hitter he threw in Wrigley Field, where he's wearing a wool uniform, it might have been the 65 no-hitter, and he threw like 160 pitches, and he's just soaked. And Jack Brickhouse and the Cubs announcers, it's just amazing to hear their description and to be able to re-witness that history, all thanks to YouTube.
And you mentioned Maloney. One of my really good friends lives here in the Cincinnati area, and he loved the book, he says, but he's given me such a hard time about not having a chapter on Jim Maloney, because that was his guy. He loved Jim Maloney growing up. And yeah, that's another guy we tried to sneak in other places, but if it were the big 75, he absolutely would have had his own chapter.
Well, is there anybody else that you wished, when you hear feedback from people, you mentioned Maloney, anybody else?
You hear Frank Robinson a lot, and that's one that I wonder if maybe we should have given his own chapter, because he was so important and so underrated amongst Reds fans.
Nah, he's an old 30. Let's trade him.
He's an old 30, right. That was the excuse when they traded him. And that anecdote did make it in, but that's one, in retrospect, maybe we could have fit it in, because I do think he gets a little bit shortchanged when it comes to Reds history. Everyone thinks of him as an Oriole, and he was treated pretty poorly by the Reds for a while, until very recently. So that's one. My generation, sort of the wire-to-wire Reds, yeah, I would have liked to have had some more time to explore Chris Sabo, for example. You know, that's one of the personalities that made the Reds.
But Billy Bates makes it.
And Billy Bates, right, never batted again after his one at bat in the World Series for the Reds. And he gets a chapter.
He has one hit as a Red, and it's off Dennis Eckersley, the best relief pitcher of his time, and he scores the winning run in a World Series. And as you say, he never made the bigs again.
Right, never got another at bat for the Reds. And that game two of that 1990 World Series, when Joe Oliver got the extra inning double and Tom Browning went to the hospital, his wife was in labor, and Marty Brenneman's making a call out over the radio for him to come back. And I felt strongly, and Chris agreed, that game needs to be in there. It wasn't a clinching game, but man, that was a huge moment. They take that 2-0 lead over the, and all of a sudden you start thinking they can do it. And as we started thinking, well, we've already got a chapter on game four of that series where they swept the series. How do we frame a chapter on game two? And we just thought, you know, Billy Bates, this guy comes out of nowhere, and now he's not a legend in Reds history, but he's a key part of one of the greatest moments in the history of this franchise. So that's one where we kind of smashed together a couple of concepts.
But also, even though they haven't been to the World Series since 90, there's been an awful lot of exciting baseball in the past 10 years, and you're able to work in Chapman, Cueto, and then the 2012 team, and another chapter on Votto himself. And after the All-Star game, I guess you could have even added to the Scooter a chapter,
right,
another home run.
That
wow.
could have used a footnote, absolutely, yeah. The big home run in the All-Star game. Yeah, you know, one thing that we went into this process thinking was, there's been a lot written about the Big Red Machine. There's been a lot written about the 1990 Reds. We had to focus on those because those are big, huge teams and important moments in the history of the franchise. But there's some other less well-known or less heralded moments. And, you know, that 2010 moment, yeah, I was at that Great American Ballpark. That was amazing when Jay Bruce hit that home run. We have a chapter on Todd Frazier winning the home run
derby. Yep.
And the reason why, that might not have been included if I hadn't been in the ballpark that night and never experienced.
One of the most electric nights I've ever experienced at a ballpark.
It really was. Yeah. It was just, you could feel the energy and you really felt like the crowd was helping Frazier along. That was one of the most exciting moments at that ballpark. And so it was a fun.
Although I got to admit that I was there on Scooter's 4 home run night. And when Schebler walked, I turned to my friend and said, you know, Scooter's going to get a bat again. Maybe he'll hit another one. And certainly he did. That was an amazing night, too. Just unbelievable. Well, this has been great fun. Chad, thanks for joining us this evening. I've been talking to Chad Dotson, who with Chris Garber wrote the new book, The Big 50, The Men and Moments That Made the Cincinnati Reds, by Triumph Books. You can find it at Barnes & Noble and Amazon, and you can find a link to it on our website, wvxu.org/aroundcincinnati. I'm John Kieswetter.
Do you want to sing Take Me Out to the Ball Game?
Take me out to the ball game. Take me out to the crowd. Buy me some peanuts and Cracker Jacks. I don't care if I ever get back. I will root for the home team. If they don't win, it's a shame. It's 1, 2, 3 strikes, you're out at the old ball game.